Line 358, Book 10, line 358. For I no sooner in my heart divined, my heart, which by a secret harmony still moves with thine, joined in connection sweet. And so Sin is saying to her father Satan, Dad, I knew in my heart you won, that thou on earth hadst prospered, which thy looks now also evidence. Okay, I knew you had success, and now, looking at your face, I can tell. But straight I felt, though distant from thee, worlds between, yet felt that I must after thee, with this thy son, I had to come after you. Such fatal consequence unites us three. Hell could no longer hold us in her bounds, 365. Nor this unvoyageable gulf obscure detain from following thy illustrious track. Okay, nothing could hold us back. Thou hast achieved our liberty, confined within hell gates till now. Thou us empowered to fortify thus far, and overlay with this portentous bridge the dark abyss. Thine now is all this world. Thy virtue hath won what thy hands builded not. Thy wisdom gained with odds what war hath lost, and fully avenged our foil in heaven. So Sin is congratulating her father here. I just ended at 375, and saying, you've won what we didn't have to build. Your wisdom got us what war could not win us, and you have avenged us. Our foil in heaven, and fully avenged our foil in heaven. And that would be God. You've avenged us. Here thou shalt monarch reign. There didst not. There let him still victor sway, as battle hath adjudged, from this new world retiring, by his own doom alienated. And henceforth monarchy with thee divide, of all things parted by the imperial bounds. His quadrature from thy orbicular world, or try thee now more dangerous to his throne. And now Satan is going to speak to Sin, whom thus the prince of darkness answered glad, Fair daughter, and thou son and grandchild both, high proof ye now have given to be the race of Satan, for I glory in the name, antagonist of heaven's almighty king. This is probably the grandest of Satan's epithets. If you're doing a character study on Satan, here, this epithet, the antagonist of heaven's almighty king, amply have merited of me, of all the infernal empires that so near heaven's door triumphal with triumphal act have met. 390. Mine with this glorious work, and made one realm helm of this world, hell of and this world, one realm, one continent of easy thoroughfare. Therefore, while I descend through darkness, on your road with ease to my associate powers, them to acquaint with these successes, and with them rejoice, you too this way, among those numerous orbs are all yours, right down to paradise descend. So Satan says, while I go tell the guys about our success, you too go to earth, your new home. There dwell and reign in bliss, hence on the earth dominion exercise and in the air, chiefly on man, 401. Sole Lord of all declared, him first make sure your thrall, and a thrall is, make sure you put him in bondage or slavery. Him, the man, make sure your thrall, and lastly, kill. My substitutes I send ye, and create plenipotent on earth. Plenipotent means he has conferred authority, all authority to them. They have authority to go and cause all the problems they have for man. And create plenipotent on earth of matchless might issuing from me. On your joint vigor now, my hold of this new kingdom all but depends, through sin and death, exposed by my exploit. If your joint power prevail, the affairs of hell no detriment need fear. Go and be strong. 410. So saying, he dismissed them. They with speed their course through thickest constellations held spreading their bane. And a bane, of course, is curse, poison, usually unto death. The blasted stars looked wan, and planet-struck, real eclipse then suffered. So as Satan makes his way through the astronomical constellations, they are suffering. They are changing due to the fall and due to his presence. The other way, Satan went down the causeway to Hellgate. On either side, disparted chaos overbuilt exclaimed, and with rebounding surge the bars assailed that scorned his indignation. Through the gate, wide open and unguarded, Satan passed, and all about found desolate, for those appointed to sit there had left their charge. Sin and death have left. Flown to the upper world, the rest were all far to the inland retired, about the walls of Pandemonium, city and proud seat of Lucifer, so by illusion called, of that bright star to Satan paragoned. There kept their watch the legions, while the grand in council sat, solicitous what chance might intercept their emperor sent. So he departing gave command, and they observed. 430. And what's it like? As when the Tartar from his Russian foe by Astrakhan over the snowy plains retires, or Bactrian Sophie from the horns of Turkish Crescent leaves all waste beyond the realm of Aladul, in his retreat to Taurus or Casbin, so these, the late heaven-banished host, left desert utmost hell many a dark league, reduced in careful watch round their metropolis. So these that were heaven-banished, are not watching at the gate because sin and death are gone. They're not watching anywhere. They're reduced in careful watch around their metropolis. They are only watching guard over Pandemonium. And now expecting, 440, each hour their great adventurer from the search of foreign worlds. They're just waiting for Satan to come back. He, through the midst unmarked, in show, plebeian angel, militant. So he's going through unmarked, and you'll find that he's going to come through here invisible. In show, plebeian ancient militant of lowest order passed, and from the door of that Plutonian hall, invisible. So as he comes through their midst, he is dressed like or looks like a plebeian angel, one of the lowest angels of lowest order. So he's going through unnoticed. Then when he gets through the doors of Pandemonium, the door of that Plutonian hall, he becomes invisible and ascends to his high throne. The reason we're calling it a Plutonian hall is because Pluto, or Hades, was the god of the underworld. It's his Plutonian hall then. Invisible ascended his high throne, 445, which under state of richest texture spread, at the upper end was placed in regal luster. Down a while he sat, and round about him saw unseen. At last, as from a cloud, his fulgent head, his bright or radiant head, and shape star-bright appeared, or brighter, clad with what permissive glory since his fall was left him, or false glitter. I like this too, to call the glory that he has left false glitter. All amazed at that so sudden blaze, the Stygian throng bent their aspect. They're amazed. All of a sudden they see him. They're called the Stygian throng because the river Styx is the river of the underworld. And since they're in the underworld, to call them the Stygian throng would be appropriate. Bent their aspect, and whom they wished beheld. Their mighty chief returned. Loud was the acclaim. Forth rushed in haste to the great consulting peers. They all rush forward. Raised from their dark divan, a divan is a couch, and with like joy congratulant approached him, who with hand, silence, so he raises his hand as though, wait, I'm going to speak, silence, and with these words attention won. 460. Satan speaking to the throng. Thrones, dominions, princedoms, virtues, powers, for in possession such, not only of right, I call ye and declare ye now, return successful beyond hope, to lead ye forth triumphant out of this infernal pit abominable, accursed the house of woe, and dungeon of our tyrant. Now possess, as lords, a spacious world, to our native heaven little inferior. It's almost as good as heaven was. By my adventure hard, okay, it was hard work for me, with peril great achieved. Long were to tell what I have done, what suffered, with what pain voyaged the unreal, vast, unbounded deep of horrible confusion, over which by sin and death a broad way now is paved, to expedite your glorious march. So he wants them to appreciate that what he did was extremely hard. It's going to be easy for them because there's a road now. But I toiled out my uncouth passage, forced to ride the intractable abyss, plunged in a womb of unoriginal night and chaos wild, that jealous of their secrets fiercely opposed my journey strange. So chaos and night fiercely opposed him. They did not want to let him through. It was tough. With clamorous uproar, protesting fate supreme. Hence, how I found, 480, the new created world, which fame in heaven long had foretold, a fabric wonderful of absolute perfection, therein man, placed in a paradise, by our exile made happy, him by fraud I have seduced from his creator. And the more to increase your wonder, with an apple, he thereat offended, worth your laughter, hath given up both his beloved man and all his world, to sin and death a prey, and so to us, 490. Satan says, I seduced man, I defrauded him from his creator, and you're not going to believe this, with an apple, worth your laughter. It was so easy that God's given up on them and given them to death and prey, and so to us, 490. Without our hazard, labor, or alarm, to range in and to dwell, and over man to rule, as over all he should have ruled. True is, me also he hath judged, or rather me not, but the brute serpent in whose shape man I deceived. That which to me belongs is enmity, which he will put between me and mankind. I am to bruise his heel, his seed, when he is not set, shall bruise my head. A world who would not purchase with a bruise? Line 500. So Satan doesn't quite understand this. It's as though you're reading C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, and of course the White Witch doesn't understand the deeper magic. Satan does not understand the deeper spiritual truth here. And so he says, who wouldn't purchase a world with a bruise? Line 500. Or much more grievous pain. Ye have the account of my performance. What remains, ye gods, but up and enter now into full bliss. So having said, a while he stood, expecting their universal shout and high applause to fill his ear, when contrary he hears, on all sides, from innumerable tongues, a dismal universal hiss, the sound of public scorn. He wondered, but not long had leisure, wondering at himself now more. 510. His visage drawn, he felt to sharp and spare, his arms clung to his ribs, his legs entwining each other, till supplanted, down he fell, a monstrous serpent, on his belly prone, reluctant, but in vain, a greater power now ruled him, punished in the shape he sinned. Satan waited for applause from his men, and what he got was a hiss. Public scorn, he thought. He wondered, but had no time to wonder, because now he himself has become a serpent, punished in the shape he sinned, according to his doom. He would have spoke, but hiss for hiss returned with forked tongue to forked tongue, for now we're all transformed alike, to serpents all as accessories to his bold riot. Dreadful was the din of hissing through the hall, thick swarming now with complicated monsters, head and tail, scorpion and asp, and asp and band dire, Serastes horned, Hydrus, and Elops drear. 525. These are the names of hideous monster snake-like monsters. And Dipsus, not so thick, swarmed once the soil, bedropped with blood of Gorgon or the Isle of Fusia, but still greatest he the midst, now dragon grown, larger than whom the sun, engendered in the Pythian vale on slime, huge python. Line 531. Satan is still now larger than the rest. He's grown to the size of a dragon. And he is larger than that dragon type of snake that was in the Pythian vale on slime, the huge python. In Greece, at Delphi on Mount Parnassus, was a cave. And supposedly in this cave, Apollo, the sun god, was placed when he was just a baby. The python was placed there too, to kill him. But Apollo conquered the python, killed it, and made that cave the site of his oracle. Apollo is the god of the sun. He is the god of oracle and prophecy. So that cave became his holy place, his sacred place up on the side of Mount Parnassus, and then later they built a temple on top of that, and people would come from miles around to see the Pythoness priestess, who was Apollo's priestess, that name Pythoness coming from Python, the snake, and have their fortune told. Line 531, he's bigger than the snake at the pit at Python at Delphi, and his power no less he seemed above the rest still to retain. They all him followed, issuing forth to the open field, where all yet left of that revolted rout, heaven fallen, in station stood, or just array, sublime with expectation, when to see in triumph, issuing forth their glorious chief. So those outside are waiting for their glorious chief to come out. They saw, but other sight instead, a crowd of ugly serpents. Horror on them fell, and horrid sympathy. 540. For what they saw, they felt themselves now changing. Down their arms, down fell both spear and shield. Down they as fast, and the dire hiss renewed, and the dire form catched by contagion, like in punishment as in their crime. They all caught it as though it was contagious. Thus was the applause they meant, 545, turned to exploding hiss, triumph to shame, cast on themselves from their own mouths. There stood a grove hard by, very close, sprung up with this their change, his will who reigns above, to aggravate their penance, laden with fair fruit, like that which grew in paradise, the bait of Eve used by the tempter. On that prospect strange, their earnest eyes they fixed, imagining for one forbidden tree a multitude now risen to work them further woe or shame. 555. This metaphor is telling us that he who reigns above, God, to aggravate their penance, to make it worse for them, put a grove nearby, a grove of trees, laden with fair fruit, heavy with fair fruit, similar to that which grew in paradise, the bait that he used on Eve, and they fix their eyes on it, because they think they see not one tree of forbidden fruit, but multiple, imagining for one forbidden tree a multitude now risen, to work them further woe or shame. Yet parched and scalding thirst and hunger fierce, though to delude them sent, could not abstain. They cannot help themselves, even if this is sent there just to delude them. They can't resist, they're too hungry and thirsty. But on they rolled in heaps, and up the trees climbing, sat thicker than the snaky locks that curled Megara. Megara is one of the Furies, the goddess or demigoddess who chases people who kill fathers, mothers, brothers. The Furies were said to have the bodies of a bird so they could fly, but the head of a woman, and they're very cruel and mean, and they have snakes for hair. So they are sitting in the trees in heaps, thicker than the snaky locks that curled Megara. Greedily they plucked the fruitage fair to sight, like that which grew near that bitumous lake. Bitumous is tar, that bitumous lake where Sodom flamed. This more delusive, not the touch, but taste deceived. They fondly, thinking to allay their appetite with gust, instead of fruit, chewed bitter ashes, which the offended taste with spattering noise rejected, so they spit it out. Oft they essayed, hunger and thirst constraining, drugged as oft, with hateful disrelish, writhed their jaws with soot and cinders filled. 570. So oft they fell into the same illusion, not as man whom they triumphed once lapsed. Thus were they plagued and worn with famine, long and ceaseless hiss, till they their lost shape permitted, they resumed. I'll get back to that in a minute. I'd like to go back to that metaphor with the trees of forbidden fruit. They are being punished with trees that are part of their sin. If their sin was to entice Eve to eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge, then they're going to be punished with a whole grove of trees that look like the tree of the tree of knowledge, and the fruit looks like the fruit, but when they bite into it and they can't help themselves, they keep doing it over and over again, drugged as oft, the text says, almost as though they're drugged, because they're hungry and they're thirsty. But instead of fruit, they chew bitter ashes. So they bite into it and it's not real fruit. This is another classical type of imagery. This is supposed to remind us of Tartarus. The very worst place in the underworld you could go is Tartarus. And in Tartarus is designed a special place for each awful person or being who's been condemned there. For example, Tantalus. Tantalus is way back in the curse on the house of Atreus. Tantalus had offended the gods, severely offended the gods, and he was punished by standing in water. He's in Tartarus, and he's standing in water, and there is a tree filled with fruit just out of his reach. He's thirsty, but when he bends down to drink, the water recedes. He can't get a drink. He's hungry, but when he reaches for the fruit, the branch goes farther from him so that he cannot reach it. So he's always thirsty, always hungry, but can never drink or eat the fruit. And it was designed for him because he had tried to give nectar and ambrosia, the food of the gods, to mortal men. So his punishment was designed to go along with his sin, his transgression. And that is what God has done to them. Their punishment, he's using the pieces of their transgression to form their punishment. Back to line 574. Till their lost shape permitted, they resumed. Yearly enjoined, some say, to undergo this annual humbling certain numbered days. Milton is telling us of a type of a folk tale, some say, a little bit of a folk tale to say that for a certain number of years, annually, every year, they are forced to resume this snake shape as part of their punishment, to dash their pride and joy for man seduced. However, some tradition they dispersed among the heathen of their purchase got, and fabled how the serpent, whom they called Ophion with Eurynome, the wide encroaching Eve, perhaps, had first the rule of high Olympus, hence by Satan driven and ops, ere yet Dictaean Jove was born. This now is, if you read the footnote here, it might be worth it. Milton is telling of these folk tales that among the heathen that they later seduced, they spread this story that Satan and Eve are the original rulers of heaven. And Milton is just giving us the Christian interpretation of the myth as far as relating this to Eve. And of course, it's just a folk tale, but since he's writing in the epic tradition, he's going to use that piece. That hence by Satan, driven and ops, ere yet Dictaean Jove was born. 585. Meanwhile in paradise, so we're back to the meanwhile, means scene change. Meanwhile in paradise, the hellish pair too soon arrived. Sin there in power before, once actual, now in body. All right, once actual when Eve sinned, now in body. And to dwell habitant. So habitual is something you do over and over. Habitant is person who lives there. He's going to dwell habitual habitant. Behind her, a death close following pace for pace, not yet mounted on his pale horse. That's from Revelation 6:8. Line 590. To whom sin thus began. Sin is speaking to her son death. A second of Satan sprung, all-conquering death. What thinkest thou of our empire now, that, though earned with travail difficult, not better far than still at hell's dark threshold to have sat watch, unnamed, undreaded, and thyself half-starved? So she says to her son, isn't this a lot better than that, to just sit there watching, unnamed, undreaded, and you, poor you, my son, half-starved? Because, of course, he needs carcasses, he needs death to live on. To whom the sin-born monster answered soon. So her son replies to her, to me, who with eternal famine pine, alike is hell, or paradise, or heaven. There best where most with raven I may meet, which here, though plenteous, all too little seems to stuff this maw, this vast, unhide-bound corpse. This is eerie. Death is telling his mother, it's all the same to me. Hell, paradise, heaven, wherever with raven, okay, with a ravenous appetite, wherever I may meet plenteous food to stuff this maw, to stuff his mouth or body, this vast, unhide-bound corpse. To whom the incestuous mother thus replied, Thou therefore on these herbs and fruits and flowers feed first, on each beast next, and fish and fowl no homely morsels, and whatever thing thy skiff of time mows down devour unspared, till I and man residing through the race, his thoughts, his looks, words, actions all infect, and season him thy last and sweetest prey. Sin says to her son, the incestuous mother, will first eat on these herbs, and the fruits, and the flowers. Then, the beasts, and the fish, and the fowl. No homely morsels. That's a little bit of a litote, a negative understatement. No homely morsels. And then, whatever the skiff of time mows down. Father Time held the skiff and cut you down when your time was over. So the metaphor here, eat fruits and flowers and herbs, and then animals, fish, fowl, birds, and then, as time passes, let me, till I in man residing through the race, his thoughts, his looks, words, actions, all infect. So sin is going to infect the race of man, infect his thoughts, infect his looks, infect his words, infect his actions with sin, which will season him to be her son's last and sweetest prey. Like going to a barbecue. Terrible. 6:10. This said, they both betook them several ways, both to destroy or unimmortal make all kinds. If you make something unimmortal, you kill it. And for destruction, to mature sooner or later, which the Almighty, seeing from his transcendent seat, the saints among, to those bright orders, uttered thus his voice. This is God watching Satan, and now speaks to those around him in line 616. See with what heat these dogs of hell advance to waste and havoc yonder world, which I so fair and good created, and had still kept in that state, had not the folly of man let in these wasteful furies, who impute folly to me, so doth the prince of hell and his adherents, that with so much ease I suffer them to enter and possess a place so heavenly, and conniving seem to gratify my scornful enemies, that laugh, as if transported with some fit of passion, I to them had quitted all. Remember, Satan had said to sin and death that God had abandoned Adam and Eve and left them? And so God is laughing back, that they are laughing as if transported with some fit of passion, that I to them had quitted all, even have laughed at me as though I had just abandoned them, acquitted all. At random yielded up to their misrule, and know not that I called and drew them hither, my hellhounds, 630, to lick up the draught and filth which man's polluting sin with taint hath shed on what was pure, till crammed and gorged, nigh burst with sucked and glutted offal, at one sling of thy victorious arm, well-pleasing son, both sin and death, and yawning grave at last through chaos hurled, obstruct the mouth of hell forever. This is the deeper spiritual truth that, of course, Satan does not know. Satan says, I got it so easy you wouldn't believe it. God just abandoned them and left. This is ours to rule. And God, telling the angels and the other celestial beings around him, whoever they are, telling them, if only Satan realized what's going to happen to him at the end, when his ravenous jaws are sealed up. Then heaven and earth renewed shall be made pure to sanctity that shall receive no stain. Till then, the curse pronounced on both proceeds. 640. He ended, and the heavenly audience loud sung hallelujah. Hallel is the Hebrew word for praise, so hallelujah is just the English transliteration of that. Sung hallelujah, as the sound of seas, through multitude that sung, just are thy ways, righteous are thy decrees on all thy works, who can extenuate thee? Next to the sun, destined restorer of mankind, by whom new heaven and earth shall to the ages rise, or down from heaven descend. Such was their song, while the Creator, calling forth by name his mighty angels, gave them several charge. 650. As sorted best with present things, the sun had first his precept, so to move, so shine, as might affect the earth with cold and heat, scarce tolerable. God is setting the seasons into action. It will no longer be a paradise of weather. Scarce tolerable, and from the north to call decrepit winter, from the south to bring solstice summer's heat. It's going to bring terrible summer heat in the summer. To the blank moon her office they prescribed, to the other five their planetary motions and aspects in sextile, square, and trine, and opposite of noxious efficacy, toxically effective. He's setting all these things in motion. It would be very effective, but it will be toxic. And when to join in synod unbenign or malignant, and taught the fixed their influence malignant, when to shower, which of them rising with the sun or falling should prove tempestuous. To the winds they set their corners, when with bluster to confound sea, air, and shore. The thunder, when to roll with terror through the dark aerial hall. Now he's teaching the different aspects of weather what they are supposed to do now. Some say he bid his angels turn askance the poles of earth twice 10 degrees and more from the sun's axle. Line 670. Milton says, some say this is when the earth tilted. The angels, he had the angels turn askance the poles of earth twice 10 degrees, so 20 degrees, and more from the sun's axle. They with labor pushed oblique, slanting, the centric globe. Some say the sun was bid turn the reins from the equinoctial road, turn the reins, holding the road by the reins, through the, from the equinoctial road like distant breath to Taurus, with the seven Atlantic sisters and the Spartan twins up to the tropic crab. These are constellations. Hence down amain by Leo and the Virgin and the scales, as deep as Capricorn, to bring in change of seasons to each clime. Else had the spring perpetual smiled on earth with verdant flowers equal in days and nights, except to those beyond the polar circles. To them day had unbenighted shone, while the low sun, to recompense his distance in their sight, had rounded still the horizon, and not known or east or west, which had forbid the snow from coast Estoya land, and south as far beneath Magellan. At that tasted fruit, the sun, as from Thyestine banquet, turned his course intended. At the tasted fruit, when Eve tasted the fruit, line 6-8-7 tells us that the sun, as though it was coming from a Thyestine banquet, turned his course intended. A Thyestine banquet would be a terrible banquet. Back to that curse on the house of Atreus that we learn about in our classical studies, that Thyestes and Atreus were brothers. They both wanted to rule. Atreus killed Thyestes' sons, cooked them up in a pot, and served them to Thyestes, their father. He was, of course, sickened. It would be an abominable, a terrible, distasteful, awful, sinful banquet. When Eve tasted the fruit, at that tasted fruit, the sun, as from Thyestine banquet, turned his course intended. Else how had the world inhabited, though sinless, more than now, avoided pinching cold and scorching heat? These changes in the heavens, though slow, produced like change on sea and land, sidereal blast, vapor, and mist, and exhalation hot. So it had to be that way, or else they would have had terrible cold and unlivable heat. It had to happen. And exhalation hot, corrupt and pestilent, now from the north of Norumbaga and the Samoan shore, bursting their brazen dungeon, armed with ice and snow and hail and stormy gust and flaw, Boreas and Caicus and Argistus, loud and Thracius, rend the woods and seas upturn. Line 700. With adverse blast upturns them from the south, Notus and Afer black, with thunderous clouds from Sierra Leona. Thwart of these as fierce forth rush the Levant and the potent winds, Eurus and Zephyr. Zephyr is the west wind. These are all winds, and they have all been released to do terrible things. With their lateral noise, Sirocco and Libecchio, thus began outrage from lifeless things. But discord first, daughter of sin, among the irrational, death introduced through fierce antipathy. Beast now with beast gan war. Now the animals, line 710, now the animals will fight with one another. and fowl with fowl, and fish with fish, to graze the herb all leaving, devoured each other, nor stood much in awe of man, but fled him, or, with countenance grim, glared on him passing. Now, since the fall, Milton tells us that animals not only devour one another and leave the herbs, but they don't stand in awe of man. They either run away from him or with a grim countenance, which means a mean face, glared on him passing. These were from without the growing miseries which Adam saw already in part, though hid in gloomiest shade, to sorrow abandoned, but worst felt within, and in a troubled sea of passion tossed, thus to disburden sought with sad complaint. And now Adam, we have Adam's lament, line 720. Oh, miserable of happy, is this the end of this new glorious world, and me so late the glory of that glory, who now become accursed of blessed? Hide me from the face of God, whom to behold was then my height of happiness. Yet well, if here would end the misery, I deserved it, and would bear my own deservings, but this will not serve. All that I eat or drink or shall beget is propagated curse. He's worried now the children he begets will have the curse propagated to them. O voice once heard delightfully, increase and multiply, now death to hear. For what can I increase or multiply but curses on my head? Who of all ages to succeed, but feeling the evil on him brought by me, will curse my head? Line 735. He is afraid that his progeny, those coming after him, will curse him. This is what they'll say. Ill fare our ancestor impure, for this we may thank Adam. Thanks a lot, Adam, they will say. But his thanks shall be the execration. So besides mine own that bide upon me, all from me shall with a fierce reflux on me redound. Not only do I say bad things about myself, everyone who comes from me is going to redound this back onto my head. On me as on their natural center light, 740, as on their natural center light heavy, though in their place. Oh, fleeting joys of paradise, dear bought with lasting woes. The next lines, 743. If you ever read Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein, get the movie out of your head, the original Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, these are the lines. This is the woe of Frankenstein. He's a monster created. He has no mate, so he has more to whine about, but he didn't ask to be made. And Shelley chose these lines from Paradise Lost for her monster to speak, and the monster had found a backpack, and a copy of Paradise Lost was in that backpack. So he read it, and he identifies with Adam. I didn't ask you to make me God. And these are the lines. Did I request thee, Maker, from my clay to mold me man? Did I solicit thee? Did I ask you from darkness to promote me, or here place in this delicious garden? Did I ask to be made? As my will concurred not to my being, it were but right and equal to reduce me to dust. Since I was dust, wouldn't it be better to just make me dust? Desirous to resign and render back all I received, unable to perform thy terms too hard. I want to go be dust again. I can't perform. What your terms were too hard for me. 751. By which I was to hold the good I sought not. To the loss of that sufficient penalty, why hast thou added the sense of endless woes? Inexplicable thy justice seems. Yet to say truth, too late I thus contest. But to tell the truth, I waited too long to contest about that, didn't I? Then should have been refused those terms whatever when they were proposed. When you told me I could do anything but touch the tree, I should have refused everything then and asked to go back to dust. Thou didst accept them. Wilt thou enjoy the good, then cavil the conditions, or carp, quibble over the conditions? And though God made thee without thy leave, what if thy son proved disobedient and reproved, a retort, wherefore didst thou beget me? I sought it not. He's using the analogy here that, well, if you have a son, and he does something you don't approve of, he proves to be disobedient, and says to you, how come you even had me? I didn't ask to be born. A very modern concept. And Adam realizes that that's what he's complaining. Wouldst thou admit for his contempt of thee that proud excuse? Yet him not thy election, but natural necessity begot. God made thee of choice his own, and of his own to serve him. The narrator, Milton, is talking to Adam here. Thy reward was of his grace. Thy punishment then justly is at his will. Be it so, for I submit. His doom is fair, that dust I am and shall to dust return. Oh, welcome hour whenever, whenever I die and go to dust. Why delays his hand to execute what his decree fixed on this day? Why can't I die? Why do I overlive? Why am I mocked with death and lengthened out to deathless pain? How gladly would I meet mortality my sentence and be earth insensible. How glad, I'd rather be dirt again, be earth insensible. How glad would lay me down. How, here's another simile, as in my mother's lap. There I should rest and sleep secure. Mother Earth is his mother because he came from the dust, and he's calling that his mother's lap. There I should rest and sleep secure. His dreadful voice no more would thunder in my ears. 780. No fear of worse to me and to my offspring would torment me with cruel expectation. Yet one doubt pursues me still, lest all I cannot die. Lest that pure breath of life, the spirit of man which God inspired, cannot together perish with this corporeal clod, this fleshly piece of earth, my body. Okay, I'm really worried now. If I can't die now, I'm going to have to live for a while till I die. Now one more thing really worries me, one more doubt pursues me still. What if I can't die? Then in the grave or in some other dismal place, who knows, but I shall die a living death. Oh, thought horrid if true! Yet why? It was but breath of life that sinned. What dies but what had life and sinned? The body properly hath neither. All of me then shall die. This is another one of Milton's heresies. Line 793, or a misunderstanding. He believes, and this is similar to the Jehovah's Witnesses today, that when he dies, he is gone forever. And then supposedly God at the last day will remember him and rise him up again. That is 792 of Book 10.